present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an advert from the Galloway Times, read by Chris Aldridge.
For sale. Parachute. Used once, never opened. Small stain.
And our thanks to everyone who sent that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Andy Hamilton. And opposite them on my left, Mark Steele and Fred McCauley. Francis, whose new vision has been accused of being nothing more than old repeats?
I suppose it's the Queen's speech, is it?
It is.
It's a bit of a disgrace, this. Do you remember all the fuss about that Crown Gate affair when pictures of the Queen were turned back to front to make it look as if she'd stormed off? And the amount of grovelling and apologising the BBC had to do for that. And the Queen turns up at Parliament and delivers this thing that she calls the Queen's speech, and it turns out she didn't write a word of it. Not one word. She gave herself away by using words like aspirations and prudence and housing shortage. I mean, I don't really think the Queen is bothered that much by a shortage of housing, personally. Or indeed by aspirations. I mean, if you're born, say, Prince William, you don't spend your youth thinking, I wonder what I'll do when I'll grow up. And the other thing is, Brown says he's going to consult about creating a national motto. That's his real vision, isn't it?
Yes.
He wants a British national motto. I thought, God, why did he? Just because he quoted his school motto on his first day on the job, he thinks we all want a national motto. You remember the French one? Liberté, égalité, fraternité. I mean, how can we match that? Also, we mustn't grumble. Turned out nice again.
Yeah. What's Latin for I keep thinking it's Tuesday?
The whole thing of the state opening of Parliament is everyone should have to watch it, because especially sort of every now and again, like at the moment, it's the post office. The government says it's got to modernise. You can't expect to carry on in this modern competitive environment with these outdated practices. And the government that proposes this does it in a ceremony in which a bloke dresses up in garters, bangs on a rod, and a bloke walks backwards, and 300 men called equerries open a door of a stagecoach and stand around. So presumably, the way they want the post office to modernise is that the postman can only deliver a letter if he's wearing an imperial postman's hat and his shirt's dragging about 16 feet behind him, and he carries with him a bloke with a rod who bangs on the door, and you open it, and then he presents the letter to you on a velvet cushion and announces, I will introduce to you a card for a takeaway curry emporium. But even then, you're not allowed to open the letter until it's been ratified by another second unelected sorting office that's made up of descendants of 17th century postmen with an average age of 106.
Fred, I presume Scotland didn't watch, because you've already got all the money. You're fine, aren't you?
I would love to think that when Gordon Brown goes round to help the Queen with her speech, he puts on a Billy Connolly wig and goes, Oh, Your Majesty! Never seen you looking so downhearted! Do you mind if I call you Mrs. Brown? Come on, let's go in the horse.
There are some great comic moments, though, that you can pick up sometimes in the opening of Parliament. I remember many, many years ago when John Major was Prime Minister. Do you remember John Major? Yeah, you liars. Anyway, there's that moment where they all have to process from the House of Commons to the House of Lords, and it's when the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition have to walk side by side and make small talk. And I was watching Major walking towards the camera alongside Blair, and Blair was nodding his head. And just as they must have passed a microphone, you heard Major say, to a not inconsiderable degree. And you just imagine Blair's thinking, I've got to become Prime Minister soon. I can't take another one of these walks.
Now listen, we had wanted to play a little bit of the Queen's speech to sort of introduce the question, but apparently it's not allowed. No, I've been reading the...
Is it her copyright?
Yeah, well, I've been reading the BBC editorial guidelines, which, can I just say, are excellent. Well, I've not been sleeping well.
And
now we have a BBC Royal Liaison Officer. Every penny of your licence fee well spent. And we're not allowed to broadcast any of the actual Queen's speech within a political satire programme. And I said, you know, honestly, we've never satirised politics. We feel more like a documentary. But, anyway, I thought we could do what they used to do when actors spoke for members of the IRA. So...
What's Gerry Adams doing?
So I've got a copy of the Queen's speech here. And I thought,
well,
Mark...
Well, we got the same bloke to do it.
No, no.
Hey, government, I'll introduce a bell.
No, I was going to ask you to do it, Mark. I thought you could stand in.
Oh, God.
As a royal.
I'm loath to hand this over. I always thought they should have given Gerry Adams' voice to a high-pitched, whiny Welsh bloke.
What should I do, it as me or the Queen? I'll do it as me. My Lords and members of the House of Commons. I'll be getting more swanly.
Do it as the Irish. I like the Irish thing. Do it as the Irish. That's
my Lords and members of the House of Commons. My government will take forward policies to respond to the rising aspirations of the people of the United Kingdom to ensure security for all and entrust more power to the Parliament and the people.
Do you not think that would be wonderful with that voice over her mouth moving?
Now do it as Bruce Forsyth.
2 points to Francis. Gordon Brown has laid out his vision for the coming parliamentary year with a packed Queen's speech, during which Her Majesty presented 28 bills, including her bill for keeping 200 corgis, her bill for keeping Prince Andrew in golf balls, and her bill for touring around the world, looking bored and waving glumly at foreigners. Anyway, so 2 points to Francis on that one, and a point, I think, to Mark for his astonishing ability to be the Queen. Fred, have a listen to this.
Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on.
It was The Clash covering an old Doris Day hit. Fred, which assembled vote was kicked away by copper-bottomed trousers?
Yes, I think this should be reworded, should I stay or should I stay? And this is one of these tricky questions because, in the interest of clarity and honesty with our audience, we have to declare that this was recorded on Thursday evening.
Mm-hmm.
So when it goes broadcast on Friday, Sir Ian Blair may have resigned. And then when it gets repeated on Saturday, he may have resigned by then, and I'm going to look stupid with egg all over my face. And if you're actually listening to one of the podcasts 25 years hence, that old man in charge of the Metropolitan Police is Sir Ian Blair, and he's still not gone.
The Police Complaints Commission have done this report, haven't they, which itemises some of the breakdowns in the system. And the one that caught my eye was that you had this emergency. They were keeping this house under surveillance, and as far as they were concerned, it was full of terrorists. And for the emergency planning meeting in the morning, Cressida Dick, who was meant to be in charge of the whole operation, went and stood in the wrong room for 25 minutes. They told her the wrong meeting room. And then, when the mistake was realised and she went into the right meeting room, they didn't bother telling her what had been said in the 25 minutes that she was out of the room, which was, you know, a bit of an oversight.
And I bet all the croissants had gone as well.
I bet.
The whole investigation is astonishing, isn't it? You know, imagine anybody else in these circumstances. They have this huge investigation. Let's see who it was who was responsible. There was all these police shot him in the head in front of all of these people in the daylight, and there's an investigation. It wouldn't make a very good episode of Morse, that, would it? I just can't understand it, Lewis. There's not a single clue to go on. There's only 20 people saw him and with all the guns shooting him in the head, I don't know. Maybe it was the milk marketing in Bordenmore.
I don't know what they were, but I think Blair made a list of conditions under which he would resign. Mm. Does anybody know what those conditions would be?
I think they involved pigs flying.
Right.
Yes, despite receiving criticism from the Independent Police Complaints Commission and a vote of no confidence at the London Assembly, Sir Ian Blair is still refusing to resign as Chief of the London Metropolitan Police. Sir Ian's speech concluded with the declaration, "There is one thing I'm going to do, which is survive." Reports that he then told journalists to turn around now because you're not welcome anymore. Are unconfirmed.
He's got so much love to give,
hasn't he? So 2 points to Fred. Mark, here's one for you. Enoch, Enoch, who's there?
Oh, I can get this one.
Ah, oh, good boy.
Yeah, this is, oh, I can't quite remember his name. Nigel Hastilow, I think it was his name, wasn't it? This conservative chap who sort of, yeah, you know, there's one that pops up every couple of years. There's one that tries it again. Oh, well, let's see if it'll work this time. You know, he was right. Oh, right, no, I'll resign. And that's pretty much what he's tried to do, I think.
I was reading that, I was thinking, that, well, actually, the rather beautiful thing about this story is there'll be a huge proportion of the readership of those papers who won't even know who Enoch Powell was. It's long enough. But for those of you who never experienced him, he was a politician who spoke like this, in this extraordinary cadence. And my dad loved him. My dad, every time he came on and I'd say, listen, that racist ranting on, he'd go, oh, very clever man, Andrew. Always, always. Right? Because he had this air of scholarship. But, I mean,
he was a professor of Greek at the age of about 24, so I mean, probably not very clever in certain respects. And also the other thing was that he spoke fluent Urdu. And quite a lot of languages from that part of the world. And he was out in India, I think, during the war. And then later wrote that the greatest tragedy of his life was that he hadn't been born an Indian.
Yeah.
So he could then be turned back at Heathrow.
Well, when Enoch Powell left...
You could do an impression of someone, and then they die, and then 15 years later, the impression becomes useful again.
Yeah.
I just wonder when he left politics, whether that rather scuppered your career as an impersonator. Was that it? Did you do any
other... I can do dead politicians, I can do. Jim Callaghan.
Wilson? You do Wilson?
Oh, Wilson's quite difficult. I can only do the dead ones.
Who? Mr. Bona Law.
Bona Law?
Brilliant thing is, you could imagine a Radio 4 panel show called Impersonating Politicians from the 1930s.
Anyway, Conservative candidate Nigel Hastilow has resigned, but insisted he wasn't a racist after invoking Enoch Powell's Rivers of Blood speech. And at the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Andy have got 4 points, but Mark and Fred are in the lead with 5.
Why can't Andy have a point for his Enoch Powell? Yeah. It's uncanny.
That's fair, actually, yes. We'll have a point, point for his Enoch Powell.
Resign.
We start round two with a cutting from the Guardian magazine's cookery column.
Salad of roast squash and scallops. This simple, colourful dish makes a winning starter, or being a distinctly sexy and indulgent combination, a great lover's supper. Serves 4.
Thanks to everyone who spotted that. Andy, which Lords are driving?
Oh, this is this... he's off to race in Le Mans, isn't this? It's fantastic. He's a Lord, he's a member of the government, I believe. Mm-hmm. His name escapes me, I'm pleased.
Lord Drayson.
Was it?
Yeah.
Drayson. Oh, I thought you meant Larry Grayson, I was thinking that. He's a dead comedian, how could he be in government? Oh, maybe.
He's not Lord Grayson, he used to be, when he first got his peerage, he was known as Lord Smallpox.
Is that an affectionate nickname?
Well, he gave £500,000 to New Labour, and within weeks he got a peerage.
But by chance,
obviously. Yeah. And then by another extraordinary chance, got this enormous contract from the government to supply smallpox vaccines, millions and millions of pounds. So he became known as Lord Smallpox, and he's managed to outlive that and become Lord Drayson of Le Mans.
Of Le Mans, because he is taking time out. He's taking a little sabbatical to go and race in the 24-hour race at Le Mans. But I didn't realise that government ministers could take time out to participate in sporting events. I think that's, might be quite healthy, I suppose, keep them fit.
I think Alistair Darling, for example, should take time off to have a fight with Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
No,
yeah, I'd watch that.
No, let's bring out the big guns, not Alistair. Ruth Kelly, surely. She's the one. Do you think this doesn't bode well for the British team for the 2012 Olympics, does it? Any backbencher with a swimming certificate?
You can run these cars on waste oil from chips, and they're contemplating the byproduct from liposuction. So, yeah, it's a fact. So at last, a use for Vanessa Feltz. You can hover in the back, shoving cakes in her mouth. Come on. So it's only a 24-hour race. Come on, Vanessa, have a pie.
They're also developing a fuel made from chocolate as well.
That's right.
Again, Vanessa Feltz comes into play there, probably. But
why this race, you stay in the car for 24 hours, isn't it? You boys know about racing, this Le Mans thing, is it?
No, that's the Le Mans one, but I think there's also a Le Mans series in
America. That's what he's going off to do.
Oh, is it? It's not the 24 hours.
Well, he's going to do that once he's done his Le Mans season. I mean, he's doing a full Lewis Hamilton. You fly all over the world doing this race. Didn't Mark Thatcher used to do the Le Mans 24-hour race?
Yeah, but not in Le Mans.
Defence Procurement Minister Lord Drayson has stepped down to pursue his dream of eco-motor racing. In the Le Mans 24-hour race, Lord Drayson will need immense endurance and the ability to stave off sleep. Luckily, he's had a lot of practice in the House of Lords. Mark, which trusted institution has received a public belting? Trust is a good word in there.
Oh, right. Is this the Bank of England? The Bank of England and the man who went on the radio and he's up, so you're looking at me very, very peculiar, like I'm someone in a, like you're visiting an old relative in a home. You're looking at me like that. Oh dear, the bank, yes, the, of course it was the Bank of England, uncle.
Yes, no. It's another kind, don't think
the National Trust?
Yes!
The National Trust, and they've been told you mustn't wear belts in the National Trust because it upsets the trees. I don't know.
No.
The green belt, of course it was.
Yes. Or the National Trust with belts, I think it would be the other one. It's the National Trust.
The National Trust?
Yes.
Seeing.
It's like an argument for you.
Build a house on the National Trust. That's right, you've got it, Uncle. Come now, come take another purple one.
Mark, which trusted institution has received a public belting?
This would be the National Trust.
Oh.
They've been told, I still don't really know the answer, they've been told something about a green belt, that you can build houses on the green belt now, although... although that suggestion was put forward, it was roundly rejected in favour of one that was more in line with buying the land. You're allowed to buy the land off the National Trust.
As long as it's
not a stately home. And is that it?
In the interest of clarity at the BBC, I am now writing the answer out in longhand and passing it to Mark.
Does anybody want to add to Mr. Steele's succinct answer? Francis, any views on this at all? No, nobody.
I thought he gave a very full and inaccurate account of the whole story, really.
The
National Trust is going to buy up Greenbelt land to stop people building it, to stop the government building houses on it. That's all it is.
Yeah.
I love
that there is one person in the audience who cares about the news.
Yes, that's quite right, too.
One person. Everybody else happy to be here for Mark's group therapy. I'm going to give 1 point to Mark and 1 point to Francis.
I'll get a point for that.
You get a point for persevering for so long.
And just a bit of medication of some kind might help us.
Something or other. Charity Commission is investigating claims that the National Trust is becoming too political after its chairman, Sir William Proby, said the Trust would try to block the government's house building plans by buying up swathes of the Green Belt. The National Trust, in case you don't know, looks after several country parks, hundreds of stately homes, and thousands of officious old ladies with nothing better to do on a Wednesday. And at the end of round two, Mark and Fred have got 8 points, but Francis and Andy have gone into the lead with 11. Before we start round three, here is a press release from the University of Kent.
The University of Kent is to host an international conference on suicide bombers and bombing on Saturday the 17th of November. It will be preceded by a workshop on the Friday.
And our thanks to Kieran Burns for sending us that. Francis, why is it getting difficult to spot a spotted dick?
Oh, birds custard are very agitated. They've put out some research, but it's slightly self-interested research, which shows that all these old puddings are dying out. Restaurants don't serve them anymore. And they found that every household in Britain, on average, eats under one hot pudding a year of the old traditional type. And birds custard is understandably alarmed by this, so they want government help to put them on the menus in hospitals and prisons and places to really suffer. I think it's partly an image problem, because they listed the ones that are in danger of extinction. It's all spotted dick and dead man's leg. gangrenous jaw, that sort of thing.
Jam roly poly.
Yeah.
No, dead man's leg, I think you'll find it's called
it. So it's jam roly poly, dead man's leg.
Yeah, of course it is, yeah.
Is it? Yeah. I've never heard that.
Anything with red, with jam in, has blood. And anything where you have golden syrup oozing out, you call gangrenous or something like that. So surely you remember that from. Perhaps you didn't have the same puddings when you were a child. You had spotted dick, though. Don't deny that.
I had spotted dick when I was a kid, yeah. That's very unnecessary laughter in the middle there. I don't see how the government's going to reconcile it with its anti-obesity drive, though. A push towards jam roly-poly.
If people aren't having these puddings, what are they having with obesity for an after-dinner treat? What are they having? Sort of a carton of cream washed down with
oh, yogurt. Don't they? This is a continental thing. Isn't it? People have puddings in the morning now. You go to a place 7:45 in the morning for a coffee and they say, would you like a pastry with that? Didn't they? Wouldn't have had that, would they? You wouldn't say, would you, 7:45 in the morning, if you'd gone for a cup of tea in an old cafe in the 1970s, they wouldn't have said, do you want jam roly-poly and custard with that?
Well, apparently, they're trying.
I like these things.
Tremendous sudden surge of guilt as a Dane.
But what is spotted dick?
It's,
I thought that was sausages and mashed potatoes.
No. No, it's sort of got
that bubble and squeak.
It's currants and a bit of suet, I think. I don't know.
It's very good for you.
Yeah, I don't know what it. I don't know what it was.
But and we you've had... got the cheek to have a go at our diet.
This is the story that people aren't eating as much spotted dick as they used to. Apparently, all too often, the British resort to spruced up, over-prepared tarts. But if Nigella can't help after all, everyone goes down the shops. Fred, whose squeak is now a roar?
A mouse.
A mouse, yes.
The fearless mouse. And there have been several fearless mice over the years, but this particular one is, I think, in Japan. Mm-hmm. And, again, it's one of these things that keeps us all awake at night, wondering how mice can be stopped from being afraid of cats. And this Japanese scientist, I assume he's a scientist, it may just be some bloke with too much time in his hands, has discovered how you damage the cells in the mouse's brain so that it doesn't know it's afraid of cats. Mm-hmm. It's something we've been doing in Scotland for years with whiskey. It just damages the right enough cells and you just wander over and say, all right, big man. Even though he's your arch enemy. And it's been a long time since I did my cat impression on the News Quiz Sunday, so if you'll just bear with me. This is a live cat, incidentally, that was never formerly a member of the government. Oh, no, I need to warm up. That was the second one was actually a mouse going... I love you, big man. You're a great big...
You know, I'm beginning to think there's a double act between you and Andy. You get
I can do number 10 cats through the centuries.
Yeah.
And now on Radio 4, it's Pets and Dead Politicians.
Yes, Andy.
Meow? I see, not Pal's cat. It's a cat with a Wolverhampton posh accent. It's uncanny.
Oh, it must be time for a drink soon, surely. Scientists at the University of Tokyo have created genetically modified mice which are not afraid of cats.
They should do it with a mouse with a big ear.
Yes.
Who appears all the time. You know the mouse that's got the human ear grafted on his back.
Oh, and the one who can run at 20 miles an hour that they've got this week. The same mouse doing all three things.
It would be pointless. He can hear a cat coming, he can get away, but he doesn't need to. I mean, it would be silly.
Good job they don't make Tom and Jerry anymore. Those storylines would be really difficult now, wouldn't
they? The genetically modified mice have had their fear responses turned off and can now sit all the way through Thought for the Day with Ann Atkins.
People did question time in somewhere, Warrington or somewhere like that. And so it ends about midnight. And then they say, oh, we've got a car to drive you all the way back home. So I thought, all right then, right. And I'm just getting in the car. And they said, and Anne's getting in the same car as well. And Ann Atkins had been on it. And I had to come all the way from Warrington to South London. She lived with Ann Atkins. And the driver was really slow. He was one of these doing 50. Just go 120. If we die, we die. I can't stand it. And then when we crash, and there'll be a brief moment when one of us knows we were right. But...
scores. Let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along, Mr. Ween.
This is from the Manchester Evening News this week. A lottery scratch card has been withdrawn from sale by Camelot because players couldn't understand it. To qualify for a prize, users had to scratch away a window to reveal a temperature lower than the figure displayed on each card. As the game had a winter theme, the temperature was usually below freezing. Tina Farrell from Levenshulme called Camelot after failing to win with several cards. She said, on one of my cards it said I had to find temperatures lower than -8. Numbers I uncovered were -6 and -7, so I thought I'd won, and so did the woman in the shop. But when she scanned the card, the machine said I hadn't. I phoned Camelot, and they fobbed me off with some story that -6 is higher than -8. But I'm not having it.
Andy.
Well, this is another one about bizarre statistics. It's been sent in by Helen Sawyer, I think it is, of Shoreham-by-Sea, and it's about a planning application. It says, Wisbeach and District Driving Instructors Association have previously campaigned against the new centre and presented a petition to Parliament signed by nearly 6.5 residents.
Mr. Steele.
This is from this week's Independent, and it's a story that says, the National Trust are now allowed to buy Greenbelt land. Or, the Sittingbourne Gazette and Times. A runaway dog caused traffic chaos on the coastbound carriageway of the M2 on Friday. The hound is thought to have caused the driver of at least one vehicle, a Ford Fiesta, to lose control. Earlier in the year, motorists called police after seeing a dog running the wrong way along the M2.
Thank you very much. Let's take a look at the final scores. Mark and Fred have got 11 points, but Francis and Andy have swept into the lead with 17. And before we leave you, here is a press release from Wroxham Barnes Junior Farm, spotted by John Cranston.
Eileen Calverley is about to set out on an expedition into the Ethiopian highlands in her role as an ambassador for the charity Send a Cow to Africa.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Andy Hamilton, Fred McCauley and Mark Steele. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Chris Aldridge. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and Paul Carenza, with additional material by Lloyd Langford and Danielle Ward. The producer was Ed Morris.